So the first reading is February the 28th of One Day at a Time in Al-Anon. We are advised to detach our minds and emotions from the problems created by alcoholism. This does not mean detachment from the alcoholic who needs our loving understanding. When I learn to disentangle myself from a difficulty, it will be easier to think it through. I will remind myself to pause and analyze. This will keep me from impulsive decisions and give me time to devise constructive action. Each time this happens, it may seem a small conquest, but each helps me to build a stable, a serene stability. And the big book reading from page, I think, five. I was to test my thinking by the new God consciousness within. Common sense would thus become uncommon sense. I was to sit quietly when in doubt, asking only for direction and strength to meet my problems as he would have me. Never was I to pray for myself except as my requests bore on my usefulness to others. Then only might I expect to receive, but that would be in great measure. I'm going to post those in the chat. I seem entirely to have lost them now, so, well, they'll be on the Discord server. There we go. So the topic is this question of pausing and thinking. I heard someone a few days ago, and it rather struck me when they said it. They said that their basic MO in life was ready, fire, aim. So you take action, and then afterwards you think about it, and you think, oh dear, I really probably shouldn't have done that at all. What Al-Anon suggests I do is adopt an entirely different approach. I'm just going to do this line by line. Let me just try and get the image into the chat. There we go. We're advised to detach our minds and emotions from the problems created by alcoholism. To detach my emotion, to detach my mind, it's really the same thing. I used to think that my emotions were this sort of free-floating thing that was happening to me, rather like the weather. And they're not. I consider it now to be the case that you have a coin with two sides. One side is the emotion, which is the rather obvious bit. It's the sensory bit. It's I'm given to understand that emotions are chiefly a physical phenomenon. But the other side of the coin is the thought or perception, which is giving rise to it. And it's the same as if you touch a table. You know you're touching a table or an apple because of the sense. And on the other side of the sense is the thing which is giving rise to the sense. So what this is really about is detaching my thoughts from the topic, from the subject matter in question. And I'll use an example that I was talking to someone who I think is in the room earlier today, and they were talking about a work problem. I won't go into the problem, of course, because it's their problem. Well, everyone's got a work problem, haven't they? Well, one or another. Either they've got a problem finding work, or they've got some work and they don't like it. Those are your two basic work problems. And what does detachment, and I have work problems, I have situations where I get upset about work. And it's always very easy to see your way through someone else's situation, but it's impossible to see yourself, see your way through your own situation. And I think the way detachment for me happens is through step 12. By sponsoring other people and getting asked the same question essentially over and over and over again, one knows the answer automatically. And in trotting out the answer to someone else, sometimes even glibly or archly, one suddenly realizes, well, that's very useful advice for me. That's precisely the answer to my problem. Sometimes one doesn't even know one has a problem until one gives an answer to someone else's problem. Then one realizes, well, that's the answer to the problem I didn't even know I had. I feel a lot better now. And I'll give you an example of what detachment looks like with my work. And I said rather glibly to this person, all I do, and it's glib, but it's sort of true. Not sort of, it is true. I go in to work in the morning. I don't work for an employer or other people. I work for God. And I say to God, what do you want me to do today? And I look at my computer, I open it up, and there are words. There's a screen which is lit up, and there are words. And some of the words tell me to do things. And so, if there's something to do, I do it. If there's more than one, I choose which order I'm going to do the two things in. And there are 15 things I choose. I have to select from those. Then I put the few in order, and then I do them. It's literally, that's all it is. Within each task, people have heard me say this before, I'm sure, but when someone asks my other half what I do for a living, he used to say typing, because that's really what I do all day. I sit at a computer and I type. Now he when people ask him, he says spelling, because that's really what I'm doing when I'm typing. I'm spelling words one after another. All I have to do is spell the words. When I finish spelling, I go home again. And then my job is, no one at work has ever said, when you go home, we want you to think very, very hard, have a good, long, hard think about your job. No one's ever asked me to do that. And report back tomorrow what you thought about your job. No one's ever done. So when I get home, my job is not to think about my work. And over the weekend, my job is not to think about my work because it's not one of my work tasks. Now, this doesn't mean I'm a complete fool. It means I'm something of a fool, but maybe not a complete fool. Because occasionally proportions have to be adopted. So I have a, I think, a, somewhere between a 16 and a 20-point plan of options I might activate if I get to the end of a financial year and I haven't earned enough to cover my cost. I have savings, so there's a buffer there. But I made a long list of things I could do to change what I do for a living or expand it or find new clients or whatever. And I got that list and I leave it there. I don't think about the list because I've never got to the end of a financial year and discovered I haven't earned enough money, but I'm, partly because I'm frugal and trust God in my spending. Partly because God seems to be doing a pretty good job of looking after my finances. All I have to do is the thing which is in front of me, and God looks after my finances. I'm not paid by any of my so-called employers or clients. I'm paid by God. But for some reason, I don't understand this. The money has to go through their bank accounts to get to mine. It doesn't come from God's bank account. I don't know. Someone will have to explain that to me. But the system seems to work. I'm going to trust it. What else does it say? When I learn to disentangle myself from a difficulty, it will be easier to think it through. I will remind myself to pause and analyze. Now, the disentangling myself, I'm going to go off on a tangent. People don't mind that, so buckle up. I have something of an acquaintance with ancient languages, Latin, Greek, and and it's very, very interesting when one compares the Hebrew Bible to the Septuagint in Greek, to the Latin Vulgate, which is based on the Septuagint, and then the King James Version, and then the modern versions. And some bits of the Bible are pretty straightforward in terms of all five of those are aligned, and sometimes they're radically different. And in some of the Psalms, they're radically different. The Septuagint version is quite a long way from the so-called Masoretic Hebrew text because it's based on earlier Hebrew texts. Anyway, that's some background. But the point is that I was looking at some lines in Psalm 119, and the Vulgate version is very good. It talks about God being, in this particular line, in the Latin, God being a helper or an assister. And I looked up the original Hebrew because it didn't seem to match what the King James Version said. So I looked up the Hebrew, and it's this particular word, seter, which means a sort of a secret hiding place where when you hide there, none of your enemies can find you. It's shielded. It's a secret hiding place. And to disentangle myself from a difficulty, what I do is I go into this secret hiding place where I'm completely surrounded by and completely protected by God and completely invisible to the world. This is why it's so useful to have the notion of a secret hiding place. So it's not that I'm in the world with like a tiny little sword and a tiny little shield of God and having to sort of fight all of these things. This is why the Vulgate version doesn't help here very much. Like, I'm in the Vulgate version, I'm still in charge, but God's my little helper. In the original Hebrew, is no, you, as far as the world is concerned, you're ceasing to exist, you're not there anymore. And from that place of safety, my spirit can't be hurt, my soul can't be hurt, my material circumstances, that's another question. They're up for grabs, apparently. My physical body up for grabs. And the disentanglement, my problem is entanglement. My problem is being all snarled up in the world, all identified in the world and my body and my circumstances, even the people in my life. From that position of separation and safety, then it's as though there's a scene in The Voyage of the Dawn Treader, the C.S. Lewis novel, where this poor, wretched character called Eustace Scrubb gets turned into a dragon and the way he's rescued is he has to enter this pool and all of the scales of the dragon fall off and he becomes himself, except immediately all of the scales grow back again. And this sort of godlike figure, Aslan, has to come in and basically strip away the dragon shell to reveal the real person inside. And this disentanglement with the steps is stripping away absolutely everything but the essential. And the essential is this: I am spirit. God's looking after me. God's always looked after me. This world is. It has a degree of reality. It's not ultimate reality. It's the venue in which I'm to learn about God and then return to God, and that's it. And have some fun and appreciation, some things along the way, and help other people along the way. But it's not where it's really at. I've got a spirit. I am a spirit. And my job in the world is do the next right thing, do the next right thing, do the next right thing, mind my own business, do the next right thing. Mind my own business. That little dance, those two things. And people talk about this, having a big life. I don't have a big life. I have a tiny little life of the next right thing, trust God, appreciate what's going on. I don't want a big life sounds like an awful lot of responsibility, and I'm not good with responsibility. Give me one thing to do, and I can do it. And from that position of complete detachment, I'm in a state of pause, Pausing is not something I do within a flurry of activity. It's not a moment of reprieve within the wind tunnel. It becomes the basic state. And to analyze the situation when I'm in a state of pause is automatically self-evident. There's nothing to think about because it's there. If I'm in a wind tunnel, trying to think when I'm entangled is like trying to thread a needle in a wind tunnel. If it works, it's only by accident. So that's why I love this reading, and that's why I picked it. Pause, disentangle, detach. I'm going to